नमः ओम विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी निति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यारिषतारिणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाशादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण सो आर यू ऑल रेडी फॉर द नेक्स्ट सेशन आर यू ऑल टेकिंग नोट्स Are you are enjoying this seminar? So, the last chapter we did is, or rather was, the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Hamsavatar, the Lord upon Brahma's prayer appeared as Hamsavatar and instructed Brahma and his sons, Sanak, Sanatan, Sanandan and Sanat Kumar. The 14th chapter, the next chapter describes or Krishna explains the yoga system to Uddhava. And what kind of yoga that Krishna is speaking here? This is the yoga of devotional service, bhakti yoga. Krishna explained that the most excellent method of spiritual practice is devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thank you. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I can see some new faces this morning, this session. Welcome to all of you to this wonderful Gita Nagari in this seminar on Lord Krishna's teachings to Uddhava, which is known as Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this chapter, 14th chapter of 11th canto, Krishna is describing about the process of devotional service as the most excellent way to make spiritual advancement. And he also speaks about the process of meditation. Actually, this Krishna is instructing upon Uddhava's inquiry, Uddhava's question. Uddhava asks, what is the best way of making spiritual advancement? You remember in Bhagavad Gita, also Arjuna asked him the same question. among the personalists and impersonalists, which process is better? And what did Krishna say? Evam satato yukta je bhaktastan parjupashati. Then, what is the next line? Jai chapi abhyaktam aksharam. No, the next thing. Yogovityama. Tesham yogovityama. So, best yogovityama, the best way to become connected to Krishna is evam satato yukta je bhaktastam parjupashati. One who is rendering devotional service unto me constantly, satato yukta. Being constantly engaged, one who is constantly engaged in my devotional service, he is the most intimately connected to me, or that is the best way to become connected to me, yogovittama. Here also Uddhava is asking the similar question. Of all these processes, which is the best? And Krishna is pointing out, devotional service is the best. This is how, when we properly study the scriptures, then it becomes very, very clear that devotional service is the best possible way. Not only the best possible way, there is no other way, no other way, no other way. By other means, one cannot actually become situated in such loving relationship with Krishna. If the goal of life is to become connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then besides devotional service, there is no other way. In this, Uddhav Gita will come at that point when Krishna is saying that by the process of devotional service, Krishna becomes conquered. Krishna becomes sold out. Krishna becomes conquered. Krishna becomes his possession. No other process actually enables that. So, here we in Uddhava Gita, aren't we getting this point time and time again? Previously also, Krishna mentioned Sankha, Yoga, Charity, Austerity, Performance of Sacrifice, and all these is not going to derive the same benefit. So devotional service is the way. So when Uddhava asked which process of spiritual advancement is the best, then Krishna made it very, very clear that devotional service is the way. And Krishna explained that this process he gave to Brahma. At the time of annihilation, even the knowledge was lost. Not only at the beginning of creation that Krishna gave this knowledge gets lost at the time of annihilation, during the time of annihilation. And at the beginning of the new creation, when the new creation begins, then Krishna imparts this knowledge to Brahma. Then Brahma gives this knowledge to his eldest son, Manu. Then Manu spoke this to Bhrigu Muni. This is the disciplic succession, another disciplic succession. Our disciplic succession, Brahma to Narad, Narad to Vyasadeva, and so forth. But here, Krishna is talking about another process, and that is, and that process is, this line is Brahma to Manu, Manu gave it to Bhrigu Muni. Bhrigu Muni also is a son of Brahma, Narad's brother. 10 sons of Brahma, Pulastha, Pulaha, Atri, Marichi, Angira, Vasishtha, Bhrigu. So this line is coming from Bhrigu, and Bhrigu then gave it to the demigods. Bhrigu then gave it to the sages, and the sages gave it to the demigods. But another thing happened actually, due to this line, due to different individuals developing or receiving this knowledge, they had also developed different branches of philosophy. Some are even atheistic philosophy, gross materialistic philosophy. And different philosophies arose, including various atheistic doctrines. Krishna is saying various atheistic doctrines also developed from this Vedic concept. Therefore, there is a need to select. There's a mixture. What we are getting now is a lot of concepts, a lot of ideas, a lot of philosophies. Now from this mixture we have to select the right one. Tough job. That's why living entities on their own cannot figure out what is the right way. General tendency is whatever appears to be a little better, we tend to think, yes, this is the best. It may be better than the other, but that's not the best. The best one, we have to understand from the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That again flows in a specific disciplic succession. Because the living entity is bewildered by illusion, is incapable of ascertaining his eternal benefit, he mistakenly identifies ordinary vows of penance, austerity, etc. to be the topmost spiritual practice. So this is actually the bewildering aspect. Because the living entities are bewildered themselves. Therefore, they cannot figure out what's the actual goal, actual process to adopt. Because they are deluded, they cannot ascertain their eternal benefit. The only true means of achieving happiness is to meditate on offering everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the simple spiritual consideration. Generally people are identifying themselves with the bodies, therefore they think that the goal of life is to enjoy through this body. If we look at this world today, what do we find? Everywhere we read newspapers, we read books, fictions, we see movies, we see TVs, all these, what are they broadcasting through this media? They are simply broadcasting, enjoy. And that enjoyment also is a very gross form of enjoyment, sinful enjoyment. What is being broadcasted all over is promotion of sinful engagement, sinful enjoyment. Meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. Mostly, mainly illicit sex. That is what is being promoted all over the world. But when we step into the spiritual realm, or when you come across a spiritual personality, bona fide spiritual teacher, what does he Tell us. Like Prabhupada, what is the qualification to enter into spiritual life? Four regulative principles. No to all those four activities. The today's world is saying those four activities are the most important activities. And ISKCON is saying no to these four activities and yes to everything else. We have only four no's. Otherwise everything is yes. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. Otherwise everything is alright. Provided you engage them in service to Krishna. So offering, the goal of life is to do everything for Krishna, offer everything to Krishna because he is the proprietor. Isha Vashyam Idam Sarvam Jatkincha Jagatam Jagat. Very, very simple understanding. Everything belongs to Krishna. And not that he is the, although he is the supreme enjoyer, but he is also taking care of us. Jatkincha Jagatam Jagat. He is taking care of everybody. He is giving everybody his quota. Whatever we need, Krishna is providing. In this way, Krishna is the Suridam Sarvabhutanam. When you go enter into the platform of devotional service and receive knowledge, proper information, then what do we get to see? Immediately we get to see that Krishna is the enjoyer. At the same time, Krishna is providing for everybody. Krishna is the supreme master. At the same time, he is the dearmost friend. Now we can understand this concept from our relationships with our seniors, like the father. In the house, father is the proprietor, but the father is taking care of everybody, everybody's need in the house. So father is not an irresponsible enjoyer. Father is the caretaker. On our part, we know that he is the enjoyer. But the father is not demanding, I am the enjoyer. Do everything for me. The father's attitude, a caring father's attitude is, what do you need? He doesn't even have to ask. And we do not even have to tell. He knows what we need, even better than we do. The child doesn't need, no, the child doesn't know that he needs to go to a private school. Right? He doesn't even know the difference between a public school and private school, or a good school and bad school. Right? But the father says, okay, he should go in such and such school. And in order to do that, I was talking to some parents the other day. In order to send the child to a private school, the mother decided to take up a job. The father's income was not enough to send the child to a private school. So the mother took up a job. Jai Shri Shri Radha Damodar ki jai. Jai Shri Shri Gaurnitai ki. So Krishna's attitude is something like that. Or not something like that. From that we can see what Krishna's attitude must be towards the living entities. Krishna is the Father, Supreme Father of all living entities. And therefore he is taking care of everyone. He sees what is the need of different living entities. And he is taking care of that. Even before the living entities can consider or understand. So when we have a father like him, when we have a master like him, when we have a friend like him, why should we worry? Isn't it natural that we should surrender to him? And that is the beginning of devotional service. Just surrender unto Krishna. Maam ekam sharanam braja. And what does this devotional service do? It destroys the countless sinful reactions of the living entity. The moment a living entity accepts this process of devotional service, it immediately destroys his mountainous sinful reactions, which is otherwise impossible to get rid of. Like yesterday we considered one example, a seed giving rise to a tree producing fruits. The fruits have seeds. In those seeds there are innumerable trees. In those innumerable trees, and in each tree there is innumerable seeds and possibility of trees. And Prabhupada pointed out our karmic reaction is like that. Once I asked Srila Prabhupada about karmic reactions, and Prabhupada is it's extremely complex. And Prabhupada gave this example. This is how complex our karmic reactions are. Just one little karma can tie us up eternally. How will you get rid of it? But Krishna consciousness destroys all these karmic reactions. As Krishna said, Ahang Tvang Sarva Papibhyo. Sarva Papibhyo. I'll deliver you from all your sinful reactions. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. Nirdahati, burnt out. This is also another consideration. If you cut the tree, you may say that, well, I'll cut the tree. If you cut the tree, again there's a possibility of branches growing or seeds falling on the ground. But if all the seeds are burnt out, you fry the seed, you roast the seeds, they won't germinate. So that's what Krishna consciousness does. It burns out all the sinful reactions. So this way we can see that Krishna consciousness is one, in one hand frees us from all our karmic reactions and offers us a wonderful possibility of developing our loving relationship with Krishna. And this loving relationship is the source of joy. This loving relationship, this is an important thing to remember, that love and joy are interlinked. And attraction and love are interlinked. Do you love somebody who is not attractive to you? Attraction leads to love. And love is the basis of joy. In the material platform, people try to enjoy or derive joy from these loving exchanges. They derive some joy, but those joy is temporary. But the real joy is derived from developing our loving relationship with Krishna. We love Krishna, the result is joy. And the question is, why love Krishna? Because you won't be able to help it. Because he's all attractive. Attraction, love, joy. Now see, Krishna all attractive. So that is how this is undoubtedly the best possible spiritual process. Because the devotee is very close to the Lord and is close to Him, he is able to turn to purify the entire universe. Krishna is making this point. Because the devotee of the Lord is very dear to the Lord, and very close to the Lord, therefore he is able to purify the whole world, whole universe. Do you have to go very far? Srila Prabhupada. What did he do? He purified the whole universe. How did he do it? Because he carries the power because he is dear to Krishna. As a matter of fact, what Krishna doesn't do, his devotee does. Krishna doesn't go out of his way to purify somebody. You remember, probably, I mentioned that yesterday, quoting Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that if Krishna purified somebody and did not purify somebody else, then Krishna would be considered to be partial. Therefore Krishna says, okay, I don't do it. I am neutral. It's up to you. But Krishna's devotees go out of their way to purify others. And when one wants to do that, then Krishna empowers him. That's the wonderful thing. Krishna empowers his devotee. When a devotee wants to preach, when a devotee wants to sanctify others, when a devotee wants to propagate Krishna's glory everywhere, then Krishna empowers him, Krishna facilitates him. Devotee desires, and Krishna grants his desire, fulfills his desire. Another important point Krishna is making in this chapter is that at the beginning, if a devotee is not able to purify himself completely, at the beginning, if a devotee is lacking, still Krishna will help him to make it. At the beginning, one may fail to execute devotional service properly. Krishna will help him to gain control over his senses. Krishna will help him to become capable. Again, we can go back to that point of relationship between father and child. If a child makes some mistakes in his early age, does the father reject the child? What does the father do? Helps him to correct himself. Don't you see father and mother, when children are having difficulty in their homework, then the parents help them. Mother assists, okay, helps them to overcome those mistakes. So this is how Krishna takes care of a living entity. And when one wants to seriously want to make spiritual advancement, Krishna advises him to give up all material possessions and other material attachments. And in this way, one will be able to constantly think of Krishna. Finally, the Lord instructs Uddhava about the true object of meditation. What is the true object of meditation? Krishna. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmanah shraddhavan bhajate jomam same yuktatamamata. And in this chapter, Krishna makes a very, very wonderful statement. Krishna is saying, Uddhava, no one is as dear to me as you are. Not even Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lakshmi, or even I myself, am not as dear to me as you are. Meaning, a devotee of Krishna is more dear to him than himself. Na tathame priyatama atmajonir na sankaraha. Atmajoni, one who is self-born. Who is that? Brahma. Shankara. Na shankarshana, na shri. As you are dear to me. Na chaivatma cha jatha bhavan. So this shows how dear Uddhava was to Krishna. Some beautiful statements from Krishna. I'll just read them from this chapter. With the dust of my devotees' lotus feet, I desire to purify the material worlds which are situated within me. Thus I always follow the footsteps of my pure devotees, who are free from all personal desires, wrapped in thought of my pastimes, peaceful without any feelings of enmity and of equal disposition everywhere. Such a devotee can purify the whole universe. And Krishna says that I follow their footsteps. Whereas devotee should follow Krishna's footsteps, but Krishna is saying that I follow those devotees' footsteps. And I go wherever they go. Those who are without any desire for personal gratification, whose minds are always attached to me, who are peaceful without false ego and merciful to all living entities, and whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities of sense gratification. Pure devotee's consciousness is never affected by prospects of sense gratification. Like we see, like one person, Ramchandra Khan, sent a prostitute to, extremely beautiful prostitute, to Haridas Thakur, to make him fall down. But what did happen to Haridas Thakur? Nothing. Because a person who got the taste of Krishna consciousness, why will he be attracted to some mundane flesh and blood? Form made out of flesh, blood, pus and urine. Rather, she became a devotee. And later on we saw Mayadevi herself came to test Haridas Thakur. She failed. So this is how a devotee of the Lord remains unaffected by any prospect of sense gratification. The most alluring prospects of sense gratification cannot deviate him from the path that he has established himself. Then, again I'll point out, if my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be harassed by material desires, but because of his unflinching devotion for me, he will not be defeated by sense gratification. Even if a devotee, due to his immaturity, due to his neophyte situation, even if he becomes a victim of sense gratification, still then it doesn't matter. Of course, that doesn't mean a devotee should fall down. One should not take advantage of these statements. Sometimes I noticed it happened. Somebody has spiritual difficulty and he was quoting this verse. That even if a devotee has spiritual difficulty, he should be considered as a saint. Which verse is that? Yeah. Sadhu reva samantam. Yeah. He should be treated as a sadhu. That may be, but one should not take advantage of that. I am a sadhu, therefore I have a license to fall down. That should not be the situation. A devotee should never deviate from Krishna consciousness. At a neophyte stage, if he has, or apparently it may happen something like that. Apparently it may appear, but it's not factual. Then that consideration comes. And this is another very beautiful statement. Just as gold, when smelted in fire, gives up its impurities and returns to its pure brilliant state. Similarly, the spirit soul absorbed in the fire of bhakti yoga is purified of all contamination caused by previous fruitive activities and returns to its original position of serving me in the spiritual world. Just as fire purifies gold, similarly, in simple word, Krishna consciousness, devotion to Krishna, purifies the soul of all its impurities. And eventually, he becomes situated in his original position and goes back to the spiritual world. Next one also is very beautiful. When a diseased eye is treated with medicinal ointment, it gradually recovers its power to see. Similarly, as a conscious living entity cleanses himself of material contamination by hearing and chanting the pious narrations of my glories, he regains his ability to see me, the absolute truth, in my subtle spiritual form. We may not be able to see Krishna now, but if we keep on hearing about Krishna's glory and chanting Krishna's glory, the pious narrations of Krishna's activities, then we will regain our ability to see Krishna. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. When the eyes become anointed with love of bhakti, then santas sadaiva ridayeshu vilokayanti. One sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly in his heart. Just as if one remembers Krishna in his mind, then his mind will become absorbed in Krishna. So constant hearing is very important. You should make it a point to hear about Krishna as much as possible. Just as by meditating upon the objects of senses, we become attracted to sense gratification. Dhayate vishayan pungsha sangaste supajayate sangat sangjayate kama. Due to sangha, one develops desire to enjoy that object, kama. So just as meditating upon the objects of senses, we become attracted to sense gratification, meditating upon Krishna, we'll become attracted to Krishna consciousness. So in this way, Krishna is instructing Uddhava Or through Uddhav, Krishna is instructing us what we should do. Satatam kirtayantu mam. Constantly hear and chant the glory of Krishna. So in the 15th chapter, Krishna describes the process of mystic yoga. Mystic yoga is commonly known as Ashtanga yoga. So Krishna describes that this process has 18 mystic perfections, which are known as yoga siddhi. Out of them, eight are primary and 10 are minor or secondary. Generally, it's considered to be 8 yoga siddhis, ashta siddhi. The ashta, 8 kinds of siddhi. Siddhi means yogic perfection, mystic power one achieves. And out of them, out of these 8, 3 are pertaining to the body. Anima, Mahima, and Laghima. Anima is the yoga siddhi by which one becomes smaller than the smallest. One can become smaller than the smallest, very small. Like it's a mystic power. By performing Ashtanga Yoga, one receives these siddhis. One can become small. When Hanuman was entering Lanka, he became very small. He became small like a cat. But still, the guard of Lankapuri, the Lanka personified, the lady who was guarding Lanka, she detected Hanuman. And she slapped Hanuman. And Hanuman slapped her back. So that way a struggle ensued between two of them. And then this lady who was guarding Lanka, she admitted that she knew that when someone will slap her, then Lanka will be destroyed. So she could recognize that this Hanuman has come to destroy Lanka. And she fell. So Hanuman became so small. And this is how he entered into Lanka. This is Hanuman's yoga siddhi, anima siddhi. One can become so small that he can even pass through a keyhole. Another siddhi is mahima, becomes so big, like a mountain. And laghima, becoming lighter than light. Becomes so light that he can fly. So these are the mystic powers that one yogi achieves. Then also there are other mystic powers. They are known as prapti. Prapti is a yoga siddhi, mystic power by which one can get whatever he wants. Prapti. Whatever he wants, he can get that. Prakamya. One can experience any enjoyable object, either in this world or in the next. Prakamya. Ishita. One can manipulate the sub-potencies of Maya. The sub-potences, not the principal potences of bewildering the living entities. Yoga Siddhi cannot overcome the primary influence of Maya. But the material nature has other sub-potences. Varshita is, then one becomes unimpeded, unaffected by the three modes of material nature. And Kama Varshayita, one can obtain anything from anywhere to the highest possible limit. Prabhupada once mentioned that he encountered a yogi like that. You see, those days, pomegranates did not grow in India. Pomegranates used to come from Afghanistan. And this person sitting in Calcutta, he just moved his hand and he produced a pomegranate. So he could pick up a pomegranate from Afghanistan. And so these are yoga siddhis. And he's pointing out that one can get anything from anywhere, from the highest possible limit. So then Krishna is pointing out that these yoga siddhis are actually not important. Rather, these yoga siddhis are impediments for a devotee, for his devotional practice. Because by yoga siddhi, one may get carried away by these siddhis. Or by this yoga siddhi, sometimes one can get a lot of name and fame. People will come, not for devotion, they'll come for yoga siddhi. Like we see in the materially, people are generally impressed with material things. Like there are some yogis who has some yoga siddhi, they perform some miracle and thousands of people follow them. Like, not even yoga siddhis, we have seen some people who can do some magic. They can perform some magic and people become attracted. One such person was Sai Baba. He would produce something like that. Not even a pomegranate from Afghanistan. He would produce like some watch, or not even a Rolex, because that's expensive. Like Seiko watch. At one time, those days, Seiko was quite among moderately priced watches, Seiko was very popular. And Sai Baba was expert in producing Seikos, Seiko watches. And most of the time, he produced ash. And sometimes he produced some cash. But people became so impressed with that. There was a big article once in one magazine in India called Illustrated Weekly. It was a very popular magazine those days. And it described about one encounter with a magician's encounter with Sai Baba. I don't know whether you all know, there's a very famous magician called P.C. Sarkar. He was very famous worldwide. So P.C. Sarkar's son, P.C. Sarkar died quite some time ago. P.C. Sarkar's son also is a magician. He also is an airlines pilot. He was the pilot of Indian Airlines. We used to know him. Very nice man. He used to come to Mayapur. He once also gave a performance in Mayapur. Very impressive performance. Anyway, so this person went to meet Sai Baba. And he wrote his about they need your name and identity. So he mentioned magician. Sai Baba refused to see him. Then he, next day he went again, but did not give his actual name. He gave his nickname and didn't mention anything. So this time he got his interview. And when he went there, Sai Baba waved his hand in the air and produced a sandesh. Gave it to him. And he also waved his hand. And he produced a rasgulla. Sai Baba was furious. And he told him, like, look, you're just a cheap magician. I'm also a magician, but I never claim to be spiritual. But you are cheating people by saying that. You are, by just showing this magic trick, you are just bewildering people. It was a big article in the early 80s, I think it was. But in spite of the article, people are not affected because they just get bewildered. Now, what to speak of these yoga siddhis, mystic power? But then again, Krishna is saying that these mystic powers are actually an impediment in the path of devotion. Now we can see why it's an impediment. We see so many people are becoming so popular in countries like America. But they do some mystic display of them, not even mystic power, some such display. And thousands of people become attracted by that. But when they speak, you see that they hardly have any substance. Anyway, so at least we understand that yoga siddhi is not the goal of life. Now, one important thing Krishna is mentioning here, that these yoga siddhis are automatically achieved by the devotees. There is one incident. You see, Shyamananda Prabhu had a disciple, Rasikananda Prabhu. So Rasikananda Prabhu was a very, very powerful individual. He was a king, he was a prince actually, but became a devotee of Shyamananda Prabhu. You remember Sama Shyamananda Prabhu? Jiva Goswami had three Shiksha disciples, Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda Prabhu. They were the three stalwart preachers after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Very, very powerful preacher. So Shyamananda Prabhu's disciple was Rasikananda Prabhu. And one day, Shyamananda Prabhu was Jai Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki. One morning, Shyamananda Prabhu was brushing his teeth, sitting on a stone. You see, in India, people generally brush their teeth by the side of a pond, and so they wash their mouth. So he was sitting on a stone slab. He was brushing his teeth. Brushing not with toothbrush, but they used to brush their teeth with twigs, neem twigs. And at that time, somebody came and told him that, you know, a big yogi has come riding on a tiger. It's true, I mean, a yogi, he came riding on a tiger. He tamed even a tiger. So Roshikananda Prabhu said, oh, is that so? So let me go and see him. Saying that, he went flying, sitting on the stone slab. The stone slab went flying. And that yogi who came riding on a tiger became a disciple of Roshikananda. So he admitted, he recognized that his potency is far superior than his. And in this respect also, Prabhupada once told me that the yoga siddhi, how the devotees achieve. I asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, how do the devotees achieve the yoga siddhi without even performing, without even practicing? Because the yogis, they make such a big endeavor to achieve those siddhis. Then Prabhupada first made one point. He said yogis, real yogis, never practice yoga to achieve the yoga siddhi. But as they make advancement, the yoga siddhis automatically become manifest to them. Yoga siddhis automatically become available to them. Just as they call it kundalini energy, or you can say spiritual energy, as they rise from one chakra to another. Generally, for ordinary human beings, this energy functions only from the base, which is situated at the end of the spinal column, to the chakra, which is opposite to the genetic organ. It functions between these two points. But a yogi, through the practice, it rises from one chakra to another. And that's why it is so important that in order to make spiritual advancement, one should abstain from sex life. Because the energy generally functions between the base to the sex organ. So in order to make the energy rise, one must seal that. One must prevent that possibility. And as the energy rises, a yogi achieves this power. And then Prabhupada pointed out, for a devotee, one doesn't have to make any special effort to make the energy rise. By his devotional practice, the energy automatically rises. He doesn't make a separate endeavor to make the energy, spiritual energy, to rise from one chakra to another and so forth. And then Prabhupada gave an example of an ordinary person trying to become rich. An ordinary person trying to become rich, he'll have to make so much endeavor to make money. But a person who has been born as the son of a rich man, he doesn't have to make any endeavor. He, just by his birth, in a rich family, he already inherited the wealth. Now, although the child is a millionaire, but he doesn't get the million straight away. When he comes to his proper age, then he gets his inheritance. So devotees are like that. Yogis are people like those who are trying to make their wealth by dint of their own endeavor, whereas a devotee already inherited it by his birthright. Devotees are the ones, those who are already born in a family of a not even million year or billion year or trillion year or zillion years. Far beyond that. It's only a matter of time. In course of time, devotees will automatically inherit that wealth. So that's the difference between a yogi and a devotee. And these are so insignificant for this rich man's son that he doesn't even care about that. A person may be making a lot of endeavor to become rich, to buy a house in Beverly Hills, right? But a person who has his own palace in his father's kingdom, will he be interested to buy an apartment in Beverly Hills? So that is the difference between a yogi and a devotee. Devotees, just by being establishing their connection with Krishna, they automatically inherited an inconceivable wealth. There is a beautiful statement here also that Krishna is making. Just as the bodies of aquatics cannot be injured by water. Can the body of an aquatics be injured by water? No. Similarly, the body of a yogi whose consciousness is specified by devotion to me. Krishna is talking about the real yogi, devotee yogi, whose consciousness has been purified by devotion to me, who is fully developed in yoga science, cannot be injured by fire, sun, water, poison, and so forth. So a yogi's body, a devotee's body, is invincible, invulnerable to any such condition. A learned devotee who worships me through yoga meditation certainly obtains in all respects the mystic perfection that I have described. See, this is what Prabhupada also mentioned. A learned devotee who worships me through yoga, through the process of devotional service, certainly obtains in all respects the mystic perfections that I have described. That means these 8 siddhis, Ashta Yoga siddhis. Anima, Mahima, Laghima, Prapti, Prakamya, Ishita, Vashita, and Kama Vashaita. Learned experts in devotional service state that the mystic perfections of yoga that I have mentioned are actually impediments, and are a waste of time for one who is practicing the supreme yoga by which one achieves all perfection in life directly from me. Whatever mystic perfection can be achieved by good birth, herbs, austerities and mantras can all be achieved by devotional service to me. The point is, by devotional service everything can be achieved. For a devotee, nothing will be unobtainable. Everything will be obtainable for a devotee. So then we go to the next chapter. I'll go through this chapter and then I will invite questions. If you have any questions while I'm going on, please write them down. So Krishna in this chapter describes his various opulences. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke about his opulences. In which chapter? 10th chapter. So here also Krishna is speaking about his opulences. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead doesn't have any beginning or end. He is the cause of birth, maintenance and destruction of all living entities. Krishna is the cause of everyone's birth, maintenance and destruction. He is the soul of all beings, and by secretly taking up residence within all living bodies, he sees everything. Here Krishna is saying that he secretly situates himself in his residence in the living bodies. Where? In the heart. Secretly, because nobody knows that, only he knows that. Although he is sitting in our hearts, we don't know. But Krishna sitting in our heart has two purposes. One purpose is upadrashta and anumanta. Krishna is witnessing and Krishna is approving. We have desires and Krishna sanctions some desires and Krishna does not approve some other desires. That is one reason why Krishna is in the heart of the living entities. But the other reason for Krishna being in the heart of the living entities is that Krishna sitting in our heart is waiting for us to turn our face towards him. And Prabhupada pointed out that the real reason for Krishna being in our heart is that he is waiting to see when we are going to turn our face towards him. In this respect, we can consider one analogy. The child says, "Daddy, Daddy, I want to go and play with my friends." The father says, "Okay, come." And he takes the child, takes the boy, to the field, to the park. And there he meets his friends and he is playing with them. He's completely forgotten everything else. He's so absorbed in his play with his friends. And what does the father do at that time? By the park, by the side of the park, on a bench, he is sitting and watching his son. The son has completely forgot the father. He is so absorbed in his game with his friends. But the father is just sitting there watching. And then when the child becomes hurt, or when the child becomes afraid when it gets dark and all the friends have gone, then what does the child do? "Daddy, Daddy, where are you?" Then he remembers, "Daddy, Daddy, where are you?" And then the father comes and picks him up and tells him, "Okay, now let's go home." Similarly, Krishna in our heart is just watching us playing our games with our friends. Sometimes in the game we win and we are happy. Sometimes we lose and we become morose. That's the game we are playing in this world. But then at some point when we call out to Krishna, "Krishna, Krishna, where are you?" Then Krishna says, "Okay, come, let's go." That's how kind Krishna is. So that is why, that's the main reason why Krishna is in our hearts. He's just waiting. When are we going to call out to him? And when we do call out to him with all sincerity, then Krishna says, "Come, let's go." So this is how Krishna is situated in our heart. And then, as in 10th canto, in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentioned that all these opulences after which there is all power, beauty, fame, opulence, humility, charity, charm, good fortune, valor, tolerance and wisdom. Wherever there is this manifestation of such opulences as simply an expansion of his potency. Jajjad Vibhutimat Sattam in Bhagavad Gita 10th chapter, after describing that, what Krishna is saying, wherever there is any display of any unusual opulence, Jajjad Vibhutimat Sattam, Srimad Urjitam Evava. This opulence and grandeur. They all are nothing but an expansion or display of my fraction of my energy. Tatta devavi gacchattam mamo evangsa sambhavam. It's become manifest just as a manifestation of my potency. So that's the point that Krishna makes here also. Material opulences are not substantially true, and therefore one should not become too involved in meditating upon them. The pure devotees of the Lord utilize their intelligence to properly regulate the activities of their speech, mind and vital force, and thus perfect their existence in Krishna consciousness. And wherever one sees these kind of display of opulence, he knows that it is simply a manifestation of Krishna's grandeur, Krishna's wealth, Krishna's opulence. They are simply an expansion from himself. Wherever there are these manifestation of these power, beauty, fame, opulence, humility, charity, charm, good fortune, valor, tolerance and wisdom, wherever they are manifest, are simply expansions of Krishna. Therefore, when we see them, how should we see them? If we see things with our material eyes, then we'll think, oh, how beautiful that person is. But when we see with proper Krishna conscious vision, then how should we see? Oh, how beautifully Krishna's energy has become manifest in that person. How beautifully Krishna's energy has become manifest. Krishna's opulence has become manifest in that person. And that is how one should utilize his intelligence to properly regulate the activities of their speech, mind and vital force, and thus perfect their existence in Krishna consciousness. Speech is very important. These are the three factors of our action. Our speech, our mind and our body. These are the three ways that we become active. So with our speech, what should we do? Sing the glories of Krishna. And also relish Krishna Prasad. Krishna varadayamai karivare jivhajai. So now that you have relished this beautiful Prasad, then shouldn't you feel grateful to Krishna? Oh, Krishna, so mercifully give us your prasad. So now let me utilize my tongue in glorifying you. So that is the bark aspect. Kaya, body. How should we utilize the body? We should utilize the body in rendering service to Krishna. Body's business is to work. So whatever we do should be done to render service to Krishna. And with mind, what should we do with the mind? With the mind, we should think. Mind's business is to think. So we should always think about Krishna. Think about Krishna, render service unto Krishna, and sing the glories of Krishna. The three most effective means for spiritual advancement: kaya, mana, and bhakya. Okay, so now I'll invite some questions. Yes, Shamal. Kishori. Yeah. Yes, the first thing is sadhana bhakti, right? Devotional service in practice, right? As you have been doing from your childhood, getting up early in the morning, attending Mangala Harti, right? Are you still doing that? The response was not that exciting. Chanting your rounds, attending Bhagavatam class, right? So just, Prabhupada gave us the perfect system. We just do that and it will work. As to look for the opportunities to become engaged in serving Krishna, associate with exalted devotees, hear from them. Okay? This is from Prabhash. Okay. So, I have heard that in the heart of a neophyte devotee, Krishna is there as Paramatma. However, as a devotee reaches advanced stage, the Paramatma gives way to Krishna. Can you please help me understand and learn about this? Did you get hurt?
No, I'm okay. I'm just waiting for my
conversation. Yeah, so the question is that at a neophyte stage, in the heart of a neophyte devotee, Krishna is present as Paramatma. And then, as one makes spiritual advancement, then Krishna gives way, there's Paramatma gives way to Krishna. Yeah, good point. Krishna is present in everybody's heart as the super soul, Paramatma. As the witness, Krishna's witnessing, watching everybody, what they're doing. But as one becomes engaged in devotional service and begins to render his devotional service to Krishna, expressing his love for Krishna, then the Paramatma begins to reciprocate. That reciprocating aspect of Paramatma is Krishna. The witnessing aspect of Krishna is Paramatma, and when he begins to reciprocate, then he is Krishna. So that is how in the heart of a devotee, Krishna becomes Krishna. Yes, Nanda Dilan. Go ahead. What's your question?
My question is, how we use in the devotional service the feeling, thinking, willing, and understanding that they want to serve Lord, they want to do the Lord. The feeling.
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 Yeah, okay. So, feeling also is a function of mind. Because feeling is an outcome of sentiment. And sentiment is also mind, mental. Right? It's a reaction of the mind. Right? Okay, the point is, how does one feel in his devotional service? One meditates upon Krishna, thinking. He focuses his mind onto Krishna, willing. And then when Krishna reciprocates, then comes the feeling. You can't avoid it. Krishna reciprocates. And that reciprocal aspect is the feeling. Yes, Suresh. Okay, the question is that how do we maintain our enthusiasm? That's, I think, you are saying, right? Because sometimes in our devotional service we feel discouraged. When we don't become successful, we feel discouraged. We don't feel enthusiastic. So how to overcome that? Now Krishna is saying, you act, but don't become attached to the result of your action. Do you act? Karmanev adhi karaste ma phaleshu kadachan. You can act. You have adhikar. You have your right to act, but not in the result. Result you offer up to Krishna. So when you do that, then whether you are successful or failure, it won't affect you because you have offered it to Krishna. Right? And it is Krishna who will give you the results. Therefore, do not become either jubilant when you are successful, because if you become jubilant in success, then you can rest assured that you will become disappointed in failure. But if you are not jubilant in success, then in failure also you'll remain unperturbed. So keep on rendering service without desiring for any result, without being attached to the result. And do you think by your preaching people will become devotees? No. Don't think that your preaching will make devotees. Your business is to preach, you are getting an opportunity. But their becoming devotees will be Krishna's mercy. That's where you'll find sometimes, in spite of so effectively preaching to so many people, some people, they don't become devotees. On the other hand, somebody who you barely spoke to, one fine morning you see that he has appeared, he has shown up in the temple, and he has become a devotee. So we don't know who will become devotees And it's not due to our preaching. It's due to Krishna's mercy. Who is this from? No name? Okay. Can you elaborate on service of a mother to her children and service to God Krishna? Does anyone has a priority than other one? Or is one less significant than other? Like you mentioned, gopis will leave their families behind for Lord Krishna. Good. Well, very good question. See, generally, the mother's duty is to take care of the children. It's the mother's responsibility. But the mother should take care of the children thinking that they are Krishna's children. They are not my children, they are Krishna's children. With that attitude, the mother should take care of the children. Right? But when ultimately one develops that kind of attachment to Krishna, but mind you, in order to do that, you have to go to Vrindavan. Not less staying in America. When you are in Vrindavan, living in a gopa family, there are many other gopas and gopis to take care of children. Huh? Then you can afford to dump them and go after Krishna. Okay. It shouldn't be done artificially. When you are here in America, take care of your children properly. Recognizing that they are Krishna's children. They are Krishna's property, not your property. Krishna's children. And this way, when you take care of Krishna's children, while you are taking care of them, you are rendering devotional service to Krishna. Therefore, at the beginning of her life, the mother is the first guru. Janani na shashat. The mother is the first guru. For the child, mother is the first guru. And she gives the child Krishna consciousness. Tell them about Krishna. Tell them about Krishna's stories. Tell them about how wonderful Krishna is. Yes. Okay, good point. The reaction should be, I tried my best to render this service to Krishna. That is the source of my joy. I tried my best. Not, so many people are clapping and saying, well done, well done. Right? That should not be the criteria. The result should not be the criteria of our jubilation. Our service itself should be the cause of our jubilation. Jai Shri Radha Damodar Ki Jai. But the point is, you see, if you become attached to the result, that means if you become jubilant in success, then you are also exposing yourself to be disappointed in failure.
To ask ourselves in times of failed outcome, why is it even
differently, you know, to get a successful outcome? Or is that even a...
That is fine. You watch your performance. Watch your performance in the way, like when it is successful, then you consider that this is how I should do it. Or I can even improve it even. And when there is a mistake or failure, then you detect where you went wrong and improve yourself. Yes, that way your performance, you take note of and try to improve yourself. Right? Yes, what's your question? In order to prove that bhakti is the highest. If other yogas were not spoken about, then there wouldn't have been any question to understand that bhakti is the highest. But Krishna, see how he is doing it? He's speaking about karma yoga. Then what is the ultimate consideration of karma yoga? Jat karosi, jad asnasi. Jat juhosi dadasi jat, jat taposhoshi kaunteya tat kurusham madarpanam. So what is the goal of karma? Madarpanam. Offer it to me, offer the results to me. And Krishna speaks about Ashtanga yoga. And then he says that this yoga system is the highest. Tapasibhya adhiko yogi, gyanibhascha mato adhiko. Karmibhascha adhiko yogi, tasmat yogi bhavarjuna. The yogi is higher than a tapasi, one who is performing austerity, one who is acquiring knowledge, one who is performing different activities and offering the results to Krishna. Therefore, Arjuna, you become a yogi. Tasmat yogi bhavarjuna. But then Krishna is saying, yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmanaha shraddhavan bhajate yomam samejuktatamamata. Of all the yogis, one who has been very intimately connected to me, he is the greatest of all yogis. So Krishna spoke about yoga, then who is the greatest yogi? Who is rendering devotional service unto him. Right? In this way, through all these stages, Krishna is pointing out that devotion to Krishna is the highest. Okay? Yeah, she has the question first. Yeah. I hope I understood your question. So yeah, okay. That's why I was. It's not that we should not glorify other devotees' super excellent performance, but the point is, one himself should not become affected by the result of his performance, result of his devotion. Others will. The whole world will recognize, but he will not become affected. Right? On the other hand, the whole world may be criticizing him, blasting him, saying all kinds of things. And he shouldn't become affected by that. Why and how? Because his concern is not what the world is thinking of him. His concern is how Krishna is seeing him. That's why he doesn't care about what the world thinks of him. In that respect, one of our acharyas mentioned, if the whole world glorifies me but Krishna doesn't recognize me, then what's the use of that glorification? If the whole world spits on me, but if Krishna recognizes me, who cares about that spitting? Yes. What's that?
Following up the previous questions, there are two other yogas you mentioned, Jnana Yoga and Dhyana Yoga.
Yeah.
So, Jnana goes into...
Dhyana Yoga is actually Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga. And Jnana Yoga is an aspect of yoga. There is karma, jnana. These are the two aspects of Vedic presentation. And of the jnana, Ashtanga Yoga is one aspect. Right? Like in the category of jnana comes Naya, of the six philosophies, four comes under the jnana aspect. Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankha and Yoga. They come on jnana. Purva Mimamsa, the preliminary conclusion, or Karma Mimamsa comes on Karma Kanda section. Right? Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda. And then Bhakti. That is Uttar Mimamsa or final conclusion. Bhakti is the final conclusion. Then bhakti. Jnana Kanda is superior to Karma Kanda, but bhakti is the ultimate. Ashtanga Yoga is coming under the Jnana Kanda. Yeah. And therefore it is below bhakti. In which way? Because when one achieves perfection in karma, in Ashtanga Yoga, in Yoga Samadhi, then one comes to the platform of devotion. Therefore, Prabhupada is saying, those who have come to the platform of devotional service, it has to be understood that they have already surpassed all these other processes. They have even achieved the perfection of yoga. Okay, very good point. How to maintain our relationship with different types of devotees. Senior devotees, junior devotees and equals. Yes, towards the senior devotees there should be respect, Shraddha. And towards the junior devotees there should be affection, compassion. So, towards the senior, Shraddha should rise. Towards the junior, compassion and affection. And among equal, friendship. Okay. Yes, Ratna Radhika. Yes, Krishna's appreciation will come from the devotees. But when you are in such a large society, it's difficult to figure out how the devotees are looking at you, or how devotees are, how devotees are seeing your performance. So even in a community of devotees, we should be unperturbed. Because sometimes Krishna may make the devotees to criticize us. Then what do? Do you start fighting with the devotees? No. We see, well, this is Krishna who is telling me. When we are in proper atmosphere, then we can take it in that spirit. Devotees are chastising me. Krishna is actually chastising me through this devotee. And if devotees are glorifying me, I take a humble position. Krishna, you are so kind. Okay? But there also we should remain unperturbed. In sukhe dukhe samakritva labha labho jaya jayo. Yes, Ketida? Verify it with senior devotees. Right? If you have any doubt that whether it's my mind or it's real, it's my mental concoction or this is the right thing, then you inquire from senior devotees. Okay, learn your lesson and not confide in him anymore. Okay? Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna, yes? What's your question? Huh? I couldn't understand your question.
Yeah, so that we should not get perturbed when we get the criticism from the devotees. And we should see that the criticism is coming through the devotees from Krishna. So, I mean, should we not be perturbed that we have displeased Krishna and he is therefore criticized?
Well, if you feel that Krishna is displeased, then don't get perturbed, but correct yourself, improve yourself. I'm serving, like the attitude should be, I tried to serve my master, but my master was not pleased with me. So that's my mistake. So a real servant will not get upset, but he will think, how can I improve myself? So the next time, he won't get perturbed. He won't get disturbed. Right? Well, if it is natural, then react to that. That's another thing. In spiritual life, we have to be natural. There's no need to be artificial. Like if you're upset, then cry. But by shedding the tears, your heart will get purified. But don't fight.
I think it's a symptom of love to be pained to know that you have displeased the person that you're attached.
What can be done? He is displeased. Now what can you do? You can lament or you can improve. Or you can do both. Lament and improve. Right. So this feeling that I have not performed properly, that feeling naturally should be there, the feeling of guilt, you know, feeling of frustration should be naturally there. But at the same time, there should be the tendency to improve our performance. Yeah. Without Krishna's approval, even a blade of grass doesn't move. But at the same time, we have our independence. You see, Krishna gave us independence to decide for ourselves what we want to do. Right? For example, whether I'll be a devotee or a demon, whether I will love Krishna or whether I'll develop animosity towards Krishna is up to me. I can decide and act accordingly. That independence Krishna has given us. Right? In the ultimate sense, Krishna is not saying that you become a devotee, you become a demon. But in your daily life, you can decide whether you'll get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and chant 16 rounds. Isn't it? Or do you want Krishna to wake you up? So this is how you have your independence, right? You can decide. Today, this is what I'll do. Prabhupada is telling me to do this through his books. And okay, I will do this thing. So that is the utilization of our independence. Krishna's mercy directly coming to? Yeah. Yeah, we have to see how Krishna's mercy is coming. Krishna's devotee gave me Prabhupada's books. That is Krishna's mercy. Krishna's devotees came to me and told me about Krishna consciousness. Krishna's devotees invited me to the temple and gave me Krishna prasad. And there I heard the devotees give a Bhagavatam class. And in the Bhagavatam class, the devotees so clearly explained that ultimate goal of life is to serve Krishna. So from now on, I will commit myself to serving Krishna. So you see, we have to see Krishna's mercy, how Krishna's mercy is coming. This is how Krishna's mercy is coming, and we have to observe it and recognize it and appreciate it. Don't worry about them. Just worry about yourself. Yes, Aditya Narayan.
You have been talking about the how Brahma gave knowledge to Manu and Guru Manu sages and demigods. So the question that came to my mind is like, we know that there are four personalities and four authorized sampradayas. So under Brahma, that could be like unlimited.
This is not talking about this specific Vaishnava sampradaya. This is how this Vedic knowledge came. Two different individuals and accordingly different idealism or philosophy and processes developed. That's what Krishna is pointing. You see, Bhrigu Muni is not coming into any of these four sampradayas.
But is it possible like under Brahman who had like different...
Like Brahma's authorized line is Brahma to Narada. And there are many other lines. They fall in the Karmakanda section and Gyanakanda section. They are pursuing Karmakanda section and Gyanakanda. Bhakti section is coming from Narada. Yeah, Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is a unique line. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very mercifully took initiation from Madhva Sampradaya. It's not that Mahaprabhu needed to link up to any Sampradaya, but to give the authoritative recognition to the Sampradaya, he took initiation from this Sampradaya. Therefore it says, Ishwar Puri ke dhanna korilen Sri Chaitanya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made Ishwar Puri glorified by taking initiation from him. Yes, Prema Sindhu. Yeah. Okay, if you feel that somebody is not advanced enough to digest the glorification, then don't make him suffer from indigestion. That's one way of looking at it. Another thing is, when you're glorifying somebody, do it with a pure heart. Don't worry about how he is going to take it or how he's going to be affected by it. Because glorification is, you know, appropriate appreciation of one's display of devotional service. He did it. You distributed so many books. Now, you are not glorifying thinking that, well, oh, he's a new devotee, we'll get puffed up, so let me not give any credit for that. No. He did distribute so many books, so glorify him. How his reaction to that will be, let it be his concern. But by glorifying, you are purifying yourself. Because when you glorify somebody, you are actually making spiritual advancement. Yes.
Remember, you mentioned that the devotees automatically get the mystic power, other knowledge and other things. So why would devotees need the mystic power and why would Krishna automatically get that?
It's like asking a millionaire's son, why does he need million? That is his business. He inherited the millions. What he does with the million, that is his concern. Now, are you going to ask, why did your father give you so much money? No. He inherited it just by being born in that family. Now, as you are saying, why does a devotee need it? Devotees don't need it. But sometimes, for the sake of preaching, devotees may utilize it. Like Rasikananda Prabhu. He displayed his mystic power. Right. In order to show everybody, especially that person who came riding on a tiger, that a devotee's mystic power is far superior to yours. And as a result of that, that person became his disciple. Yes, Ishwar Puri. Okay, let me deal with the question number one first. What is your question? How can one...
Not 24 hours, Krishna's in the mind.
Yeah. By thinking about Krishna, by remembering Krishna's instructions, that is how the mind is engaged. In this respect, an example has been given. A person who is very attached to money, what does he always think of? Money. Even in his dream he thinks of money. Right? So similarly, you see, a devotee, because he loves Krishna, always thinks about him. Another example can be a young boy in love with a young girl. What does he always think of? So similarly, when one develops his love for Krishna, he'll always think of Krishna. Okay, what's your second question? Good point. Now the question is, for what purpose you are driving the car? Okay. So because you are driving the car to go to the temple, your driving the car becomes devotional service. The end justifies the means. A devotee is cooking for Krishna. Is he thinking of Krishna? Or he's thinking of the vegetables on the pan? His mind is absorbed in cooking. Right? But because he's cooking for Krishna, this service is devotional service. So beat it up with a stick and bring it to its proper shape. But at least you're thinking of it now. So even then, it is positive. That you may not have thought of Krishna at that time, but later on that you are thinking, I should have thought of Krishna at that time. That's a good sign. So this is how we are practicing to remember Krishna. Last question. Okay, you have a, Aparajita, you have a question also? Okay. How to overcome? A river is flowing, and on the riverbed there are some boulders. Does the boulder stop this movement of the river? Rather, it increases the speed of the current. Right? Similarly, obstacles will not prevent but enhance our devotion. All right. Aparajita?
I have a question from the morning class. You were telling about the wakefulness dream and the statement where these people, I was just thinking from, like I see some patients in coma, where would you put them? Because you know, some people have not had the other experience when they're in coma. So if they're not having rasa, sattva, or they're not having
Yeah. The coma actually means his gross body is not functioning. Right? As a doctor, you should know. The gross body is not functioning, but the subtle body is functioning. May be functioning, may not be. Like the subtle body also can be in a coma. I mean, inactive. Right? Like then it is more like a deep sleep. And Prabhupada once mentioned, being in coma means the Jamaraj cannot figure out where should he go. Because his karmic conclusions are so complex that Jamaraj is bewildered whether to send him to hell or to which hell. So that's how he puts him in that state. Another thing is that this coma situation is an artificial arrangement by modern medical development. By artificial means, they're keeping the soul in the body. The soul was destined to live, right? But through artificial means, like through ventilators, through this arrangement, through that arrangement, they're not letting the soul leave the body. It's a torture, actually, to the living entity. Okay. Yeah, you are a doctor also. Suicide, I don't say suicide, the person himself is not deciding. You can say, you see, in that situation, is the person deciding himself or? Like he's in coma. He's in coma. How can he decide for himself? But his relatives. Okay, then let me go. Very, very wise. Right? So if that is his will, then abide by his will.
No, but she said, but you are doing the same, and you said you should be
the thing is that, you know, like how you're extending his lifespan by putting him in ventilator, right? Or giving him all kinds of artificial arrangements. So what's the point in giving those artificial arrangements to increase his stay in a body that is already finished? Just let us consider, the house is falling apart. Right? Another house is ready for him to move on. Now, is it wise to keep him in that old dilapidated house where the roofs are leaking, sanitary doesn't work, and the whole, there is no electricity, there is no, you know, water supply? What's the point in living in such a house when you know that there's a new house waiting for him? Good point, good point. He is either suffering his karmic reactions. Now who is going to decide that karmic reaction? Jamaraj or you? So here you are not letting Jamaraj decide. You are taking the decision on your hand. And that is the problem. Right? Let Jamaraj's decision be the final one. Jamadutas are waiting. And you are saying no. Right? No, I'm just saying, not you, but the system or the relatives or the arrangement. Okay, thank you all very much. We are already